Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Over the last several years, Missouri politics and government have emerged as a battleground for the rights of trans people. In 2023, state lawmakers passed a ban on gender-affirming care for children and another ban that imposed new restrictions on trans athletes in school sports. While more bills akin to those are expected to come this year, the fallout from last year's continue now. That includes a potentially landmark legal case brought by transgender children and their parents that claims Missouri's gender-affirming care ban is a form of discrimination and therefore is unconstitutional. In October, that case went to trial. Over 13 days, lawyers on each side argued, questioned witnesses, and submitted stacks of documents and research in their favor. The case could change the landscape on gender-affirming care in Missouri. Annalise Hanshaw is a reporter for the Missouri Independent. She covered the trial last month, and she joins us now. Annalise, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Hi, thank you.
Annalise, let's talk first about the 2023 law at the center of this case. And it's about more than just restricting doctors from prescribing gender-affirming care to minors. What did this law encompass?
Yeah, so because of this law, minors were completely barred from getting gender-affirming surgeries and starting new prescriptions on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. Those who had already begun this were permitted to continue as long as their healthcare provider felt comfortable, but because of the medical malpractice provisions in the law, many providers have decided not to continue that care, forcing a lot of families to go out of state to continue their child's prescription of, you know, cross-sex hormones, puberty blockers, and all of that. And that's just what affects children. We do have some effects on adults because of this law. And that would be for incarcerated adults in Missouri's prisons. They cannot access gender-affirming care, specifically surgeries, I believe. And then Missouri Medicaid will not be paying for gender-affirming care.
Mm-hmm.
And that's adults and children.
Right. And when we say children, I do want to emphasize that we're talking about minors, not you know, elementary aged kids, right?
Yes. There's actually, it was reviewed a lot in the trial that the medication starts at the onset of puberty. That's the first time you can access it. So really adolescence and up. And, you know, not everyone starts at the youngest age. So it's really preteens and teens mainly.
Mm-hmm. Now, Annalise, you reported on how the two sides arguing in various ways involved the impact of gender-affirming care. And you did report that the two sides are in conflict, too, about the basic facts of what gender-affirming care even is. When it comes to basic definitions, Annalise, where are these two sides coming from?
Yeah, it feels like the judge is going to have to sort through what is the truth when he's given two different sets of facts. We have the state side saying gender-affirming care is very new in the United States. This is a very new thing. And then we have the ACLU of Missouri and Lambda Legal and Brian Cave, Leighton Paisner, those attorneys saying, no. This has been going on for decades. We are seeing more prominence of this. But gender-affirming care, they're saying it's safe and effective. And the state is like, whoa. No, we want to protect the children from this. So it's completely two different views of what this medical care is.
Mm-hmm. And there's been the argument made by Solicitor General Joshua Devine that gender transition intervention is experimental. at best and deeply harmful at worst. Whereas an attorney with the ACLU of Missouri, Julian Cox, labeled the treatment medically necessary, evidence-based, and potentially life-saving. I mean, these are, as you say, really different positions to be coming from. The plaintiffs in this case, though, which includes, again, trans minors and their families, as well as a health clinic in South St. Louis, what is their argument against this law that bars transgender care?
Yeah, so the argument, a lot of it centers around the benefits of the medication, especially, you know, being able to start it at a young age if the child is experiencing gender dysphoria from that younger age, that they could start puberty blockers when puberty starts to show up and, you know, not have to deal with those secondary sex characteristics that would increase the dysphoria. So their case is that this is really harmful to prevent their access to this. And some of the plaintiffs have had to drive out of state to access care. Some have said we weren't able to make as thoughtful of considerations because we knew this law was going to become effective. So we chose to go ahead with something and we had to, you know, there's steps that people go through as far as protecting fertility and different things. So the complaints from the plaintiffs were like, we were not able to make the best choice about our healthcare. We're having to drive out of state. This is really tough for us, mm-hmm. you know.
And is this why the plaintiffs are claiming that this is discrimination?
They're claiming it's discrimination because it is specifically targeted at trans people. Puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones are still available to Missourians, but for other conditions. So that's why they're saying it's discriminatory in nature and that these medications are only barred when you're using this to treat gender dysphoria.
Mm-hmm. So as we're talking about this case, I can say plaintiffs, which includes minors and their families, but we're talking about people who have had very particular, very impactful experiences. And a number of transgender people testified about the care they received. Annalise, what is it that stood out to you about the personal stories they shared?
You know, I hear a lot of these stories in this reporting, so I kind of come to know, it seems like, you know, these young people tend to do a lot better in school when they have this medication. That's what we heard from the witnesses in the trial. There was a young man who came to testify and said, he wasn't a plaintiff, but he said, this law is going to be bad because I am the product of being able to get this care from an early age and I'm doing so well. You know, I have been dating, I've been active in social settings in college, like I am thriving, and this would not have happened, you know, if I had, you know, developed these secondary sex characteristics at a young age and had to go through larger medical treatment as an adult now. So his testimony was very much of the success story, which is impactful to show, like, they're saying it's so harmful, but he's like, I love my life. And this is part of the reason why I'm thriving as a young man in college. You know, you just seemed like, you know, your normal young guy in a fraternity.
We're speaking with Annalise Hanshaw, who is a reporter for the Missouri Independent, and we're discussing a lawsuit against a Missouri law that restricts gender-affirming care. Annalise, you also have written in one of your pieces a lot of detail about the experts brought by the state who argue that essentially gender-affirming care is harming kids. And there are these questions about the expertise of those witnesses. And that's something that you get into in the opening line of the piece that you wrote about the trial. You said that the judge's decision could hinge on whether he, quote, put stock in expert witnesses touting retractor studies and conspiracy theories about Jerry Sandusky. So, Annalise, can you help us understand that? And as a reminder, Jerry Sandusky is the former Penn State assistant football coach who was convicted of serial child molestation. How is it that Jerry Sandusky came into this case?
Yes, so this is mainly about one particular expert witness, John Michael Bailey. He has published studies about trans kids and is a little bit of a controversial figure and that his studies have been retracted, and he's claiming it's cancel culture. But the way he conducted these studies has been highly criticized by the scientific community. He wanted to look at detransitioning and desisting, which is beginning medication to transition and then stopping. And the way he recruited his survey participants was to go on Reddit and go to the detrans and desist subreddit communities to recruit participants. So that seems like a flawed way to study. And then another one where he wanted to prove that this theory called social contagion of like kids influencing other kids to be trans, he wanted to prove that this was a thing by using information pulled from a website that is very harsh about trans kids. It's a place for parents who don't believe their kids are trans to meet and talk. And so just his methodology has been highly questioned.
Right. And has not adhered to what research, qualified research would entail. Annalise, overall,
yes.
I mean, what was your impression of the state's expert witnesses? I mean, did anything stand out to you about the case they were making?
The state's expert witnesses were largely people who do not treat gender-affirming care in adults. Like, there have been some who have written previous letters of support to start people on gender-affirming care, but the state's position was that these outsiders to gender-affirming care were better because they didn't benefit financially. But a lot of them came through advocacy groups. There's lots of strange things out there about some of them. We have one who is widely criticized for sympathizing with pedophiles. So, like, these are not people that do not raise eyebrows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the judge listening and then having to question things like the Jerry Sandusky. Like, it was just kind of a way that the plaintiffs pointed out, hey, this guy has been posting online that he believes Jerry Sandusky is innocent. And then the judge had to say, like, hold up. Like, maybe I need to ask this guy some questions.
Right. Now, another witness who testified in favor of this gender-affirming care ban was Jamie Reed. And we've discussed Reed's role on this show before. She's a former caseworker at a gender clinic in St. Louis, and she later called for that clinic to be shut down. Reed has especially targeted her criticism at gender care for children. What did you take, Annalise, from Reed's testimony in this particular case?
Her testimony, because she is not a medical doctor and worked as a caseworker, she could not give expert testimony about, you know, the best way to treat people. So she mostly spoke about her experiences, and it got into a lot of her record keeping while she was a caseworker at the Transgender Center. And a lot of it had to do with you wrote down kids' medical numbers and started tracking information about them. Are you worried about that? Like, should that be a legal problem? Which is kind of a separate issue from the trial, but one that parents who came up, you know, they're given Reed's list and asked to identify their child's medical record number on it, and it's there, and they get highly concerned. You know, why is this person tracking my child and having concerns about my child? My child was super happy. Like, so I, her testimony, I think, you know, a lot of it revolved around her experience and these questions we have about her record keeping, but it also got into her advocacy work, because now she runs a nonprofit that advocates against gender affirming care for transgender youth, and, you know, has become an activist and has really come to speak out against a lot of gender affirming care.
So this trial, it concluded after 13 days, and the decision will be made by Judge Craig Carter of the Wright County Circuit Court. And in your reporting, you talked about Carter's questions at the start of trial and how they compared with the trial's final days. And this is something that you alluded to earlier. But can you talk with us about that? I mean, what specifically did you notice or see in Judge Carter, you know, about his questions over the course of the trial or even the way that he posed them?
It seemed that he was listening super intently, because he started out, you know, asking about what is non-binary, you know, these things that if you've been super consumed in what gender-affirming care is and the news about this all, you're going to know these things. But he seemed kind of a newcomer to this whole realm of what is gender-affirming care, what is gender dysphoria, you know, all of this that he learned in the first few days. Then by the end of the trial, he starts asking questions. It seems like he's trying to find the line in which the law becomes unconstitutional or constitutional. He's wondering when we can, if there's not enough research on gender affirming care and it's experimental, you know, if that is so, do parents have the right to treat has been allowed in other treatments, and trying to find, okay, when would we know that it would be okay? And just trying to find that line of if it is a highly contested form of medical care, when will we know that is okay and we need to peel back this ban?
The impact of this decision, I mean, it really, it hinges on constitutionality. So if it is ruled that this ban on gender-affirming care that does affect not only minors, but also adults, what happens then? I mean, could Missouri lawmakers at that point move to pass another and similar bill?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen next. There's been discussions about rolling back the sunset, because there's sunset provisions on the restrictions on puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones for kids. So the surgeries have been permanently banned by this law, but the medications themselves have a sunset. And lawmakers last session were considering, you know, getting rid of that sunset. And that sunset was put in as part of a compromise with Democrats in the state Senate. So I think the sunset is still going to be on people's mind. But the judge was saying things about, you know, I want to make sure this case file looks good, because I expect that either side would appeal.
And as we close here, Annalise, what is it that you will be looking for or at from this point?
I think next we're waiting to see what the ruling takes into consideration. There's been some filings even in the last few days about, you know, we should exclude this person's testimony. We shouldn't look at this or that. So it'll be interesting to see what that ruling is and what it includes. And there is a lot that I expect to go forward. This will be a long-term thing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Annalise Hanshaw is a reporter for the Missouri Independent. Annalise, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.